far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode,
it's our interview with Jeffrey from the Golden Anti blog, and we discuss our anime first loves.
Because I was watching, I don't know if anybody's seen Humanity Has Declined lately. It's a brand new show that showed up, I think, a few seasons ago. And they had the very first character I've ever seen that spells his name with a G. G-E-O-F-F. So I'm like, wow, someone in anime actually has a name like me. I've been waiting 30-something years for that.
You're so special.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they haven't put a Dustin in an anime yet, as far as I know.
Hasn't put a Dustin? I guess not. I don't know. Well, for one thing, there aren't too many, foreigners, period, in anime. And so, I don't know. Someday. It's not a name. Well, I guess, now that I think about it, Dustin is it's not that hard to say in Japanese, I guess.
Dustin Su.
Dustin kana.
When I was in Japan, the people at the airport called me Sumisu-san for Smith, my last name.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. It's we think it's a common last name, but not to them.
Yeah.
Well, then you got the other end of the spectrum where, you know, freaking Tomino, like, for all his characters in the show, is like, what ancient Greek word or person can I use as a name that no one has ever heard of before?
Oh, relating to that, the Kshatriya, is that in Victory Gundam? That's, I can't remember, but it's like a ship or a mech or something, right?
Wait, is that the blonde chick?
No, I think it's a, well, I don't know what it is, but I know it's in a Gundam series, and in one of my classes they're talking about it all the time. And it's like some Indian, it has something to do with Hinduism. I don't know.
Wait, I know the name, but I just, like, what does it look like?
I kind of think it's it's some sort of mech, isn't it? I don't know.
Well, I figure that much.
That or a ship, I'm not sure.
Oh, I know, I think of what it is.
Maybe it's in Unicorn?
I know that name.
Do you think it's in Unicorn?
It might be. Maybe it was one of those names I couldn't pronounce when we first started reviewing Unicorn. And, you know, because how I always bastardize names.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just so good at doing that.
Yeah. Like, what was the Benajer you said was Bernard, right?
Yeah, Bernard and I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess we have problems with American names, too.
Yeah. You got a recording, right?
Yeah, I finally got it to start.
Okay.
The Kshatriya is like a large green mech.
Mobile armor?
NZ666.
I think, no, that's in Unicorn, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Unless you want to add Jeff on and be like, we know another Jeffrey, or Jeff, and we're like, Jeff, what show's the Kshatriya on?
There's a comic writer called Jeff Johns that spells his name like that. G-E-O-F-F. Okay. So I guess it's not unheard of. Anyway, right. What were we going to talk about tonight anyway?
Well, we have a special guest on, which we should treat our guest, a special guest, because we are somewhat professional. And then also, I figure we can knock out two birds with one stone and talk about our anime first loves, which is like anime, the first anime that we actually saw that's like, I want to watch anime for the rest of my freaking life.
Yeah, because Valentine's Day is coming up. And
yeah, so I figured it's something special. I mean, other than the new Die Hard coming out and Aliens, I mean, it's like, I really don't need a girlfriend this year. But if one happens to come along, then I'm not going to complain.
Wait, what's going on with Aliens?
Colonial Marines, the game comes out like Tuesday.
Oh. What console is that for?
PS3, 360, PC, I'm sure.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's been in development for like 6 years. And like my brother and I were watching Aliens tonight, actually. He's still watching the end of it. But we're outside, like basically, we're watching it from his room on the patio because the TV's facing out. So we had to like open the window and the blinds up to his room. And we're out on the deck, like smoking cigars, watching it outside.
Can you hear it?
Yeah, we had it pretty rigged. We stopped it at one point because like there was a no tobacco policy in the apartment complex. Oh. And like we heard someone walk by with a dog because we know one of the people that work here has a dog. And we're just like, oh, fuck. And so we're running in the house with cigars. And I'm like, oh, great. Well, I don't want my parents to know that the apartment smells like cigars.
Tobacco
like,
sniffing
and then we're
dog.
Like looking outside and he's checking. He's like, I don't see no dogs. So we just went out there and watched some more of the movies. So.
Oh, okay.
We're not white trash or ghetto that much.
There's nothing like running with cigars. That's what they're made for.
Yeah. They hold pretty good. You buy a good one, you can smoke it down certain size, and it's like, man, this thing is not falling apart. This is a good cigar.
Yeah, I mean, hey, running with cigarettes is even harder. I mean, those things, you know, they're gone in seconds. So,
yeah,
hey, you got something that can last you like, you know, 100 yards, 200 yard dash.
We didn't really run that far. It was like in the house, and that's like, you know, 5 feet away, and we're just kind of like, you know, what's going on? We don't want to get caught. So, but I think we're good.
It really should be an Olympic sport, you know, chain smoking 100 yard dash. You know?
Well, like you don't smoke with cigars like as a cigarette. Like if you smoke it through your lungs, you're going to die. It's one of those that's in your mouth.
That's
thing.
That's true. Still, yeah. I'd like to see that. That would be an awesome.
It event. Might as well become an Olympic sport. I mean, why not? I mean, one day, next to airsoft wars. All right, well, I guess we never really do an introduction for this podcast, but I think people would know if they click on the link. But we're the Anime of Yesteryear podcast, and we have a special guest, Jeffrey Tibet.
Oh, man, you got the first name right, but the last name. You're getting that.
Yeah, we kind of dick around sometimes. Well, anyways, like I know I've been keeping up with your new blog, Golden Anniversary. But you have decided, the way I've interpreted it, as you've made a blog to get all the other bloggers and podcasters and the spectrum of anime fandom to talk about 1 year of history and the past 50 years of anime and write something about it and make it as cool as possible for people going to go back and be like, wow, I really need to check out Cutie Honey or Honey and, you know, Astro Boy and whatever.
Well, I mean, the way that it came about is... I ran another blog before it, and it's still up. But I remember that I was looking at basically I was just flipping through Wikipedia one night. I'm like, you know, thinking about sort of okay, what's next year? And 2013 came up, and I'm thinking, all right, cool. How far back can I get on animated television series? And then I realized that in 1963, January 1st of 1963, Astro Boy actually debuted. Mm-hmm. And if you do math, and you know, I'm not sure how good people are with math, but that's 50 years ago, almost on the button. And
no,
yeah, I know,
I knew.
But I mean, no one was talking about it. Maybe it was a big thing in Japan, you know, 50th anniversary, but nobody here was talking about it. And it got me thinking, okay, how can we, you know, honor this the right way? How can we, as fans over here, sort of show our appreciation towards the medium? And it got me thinking, well, it's 50 years since then. It's almost 50 weeks in a year. Why don't I try to see if I can get 50 people who are interested and each can write about a year? So one thing led to another, and I had maybe 10 people interested, and then there were 20 people, and so on and so on, and that was sort of the final product. I got 50 people that were interested. And so go ahead.
I was going to say, how long did it take for those people to respond to sign up for all those years?
Well, a lot of this was through Twitter. So there were probably right off the bat, I had maybe 10 people, right? You know, first hour, 10 people that were interested. But a lot of them were, okay, I want to write about something in the 2000s, or I want to write something from last year. And it took a while, but I'd probably say maybe 2 weeks, we got all 50 spots filled up. And
nice.
That's about maybe mid-November was when we came out with it. So around the beginning of December, we got everything filled up, and that gave us about a month or so to sort of get everybody on the same page. And when January 1st came out, we posted our first one. Charles Dunbar, who runs his own blog Study of Anime, he gave us this awesome two-part two-part coverage of 1963, and just blew the doors off the blog to begin. And since then, we've been doing about maybe two articles every week. Hopefully, we can get everything covered by the end of June.
Yeah, it sounds like it's on that course to get the at least get it done by June or so, which is still amazing, even if you get it done within this year.
I think there's no doubt that we were going to get it done this year. But I don't know how many people would have been patient enough to have a blog that only puts out one article every week. So we ended up just, doubling our speed there, and putting out two articles a week, I think, is probably a good pace.
Okay. And how did you become an anime fan?
Let's see. I was probably back in 93, I was graduating from high school, and back then I was a big Marvel Comics fan. We had, a comic book shop, within driving distance. So, I went there, and the guys there also ran, some sort of a video rental, center as well. And they had a few anime shows up there, and at first, I wasn't interested. It looked like it was, it was all robots. It was Robotech. It was, I think they had Orgus there as well. A lot of the early stuff. And I wasn't interested, so I looked at the comics, and I picked up Ranma One-Half, one of Viz Manga's early stuff.
Yeah.
And it sort of snowballed from there. I leafed through it. It wasn't colored. It wasn't complex like a lot of the styles that I had seen in Marvel, and one thing led to another. I decided, okay, maybe I can read a few other things. I picked up Dark Horse and stuff from them, and then a friend, when I went to college down in Atlanta, a friend of mine suggested, hey, let's watch something on TV. It's going to be something called Akira, and I was like, I don't know, guys. I mean, I like Kung Fu. I like things like that, but I don't know if I wanted to watch this. And at the end of the show, at the end of the entire movie, I'm like, yep, you got me. You got me. I'm in. Go ahead. So it sort of snowballed from there. I stuck on a lot of Rumiko Takahashi's stuff, Ranma One-Half, like I said. Loved Bubblegum Crisis. That sort of spiraled into Tenchi Muyo. And just things, snowballed from there.
Do you remember what channel Akira was on? Was it Sci-Fi? Or?
Geez, this was a long time ago. So this was this wasn't even cable. This was like in the 60s. If you had a UHF, you'd have to really crank that thing to get to one of the really high 60s, high 70s stations. But it was like,
okay.
I want to say it was like, one of those midnight 2 a.m. movies, so not many people watched it.
You said Bubblegum Crisis, so you have my full undivided attention.
Yeah, it was a great OAV series. I love the designs. the music was good for the time, and I just kept watching.
Nice. Did you ever get into the TV series, the Tokyo 2040?
Not really.
Have you seen it?
I probably saw the first episode and thought to myself, great, that was a great episode of El Hazard. It didn't have sort of, I think, the tricks and the bells and whistles that the OAV series had. And so I decided to put it to the side. I don't know if I'm going to rewatch it, but the original will always be my choice.
Okay, I remember when I first saw the original, I saw the first three episodes actually on one of those pink glittery DVDs that Anime Ego had. It wasn't that remastered edition they did later, and I brought it back to GameStop because I was just like, I don't know if I really like this. And I watched it a year or so again later, and that's when I was like, oh my gosh, I love this OVA. Yeah, I first started watching the TV series, but it was like I saw the last half of it. Then I went back and watched the first half within a year, and then I own it on DVD. So,
now was that a 26 episode series? I forget. I can't.
Yeah,
remember.
It's 26 episodes, and it even has I'm sure with at Bubblegum Crisis, you've heard of 80 Police Files.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. I've got that on DVD, but my friend hooked me up with a Tokyo 2040 version of 80 Police to protect and serve. And that's 12-part OVA. And I've got that on DVD that I'm going to make these two jokers watch one day when I stream it. So,
is this the 12-episode OVA?
Yeah, that's the 12-part OVA.
I have that one. I just got it for Christmas in a 2-pack with Parasite Dolls.
Okay. Wait, did you already see Parasite Dolls?
Yeah, I just saw it last week before I watched the Cybernets episode about it.
What did you think of it?
It's all right, but kind of forgettable. I don't really remember what the plot's about.
Yeah, I don't understand why Steve loves that show. He gave it so much flying colors, and they talked about it. I'm just like, really?
It's got kind of a cool noir atmosphere, but it's not, the best thing ever.
Yeah, it's the time of, the three episodes are split up, within 10 years or something, and there's, no explanation of why Tokyo is on fire. It just is. And, it's so forgettable. I've seen it twice. And, I'll look at it, when I'll go to used bookstores, and it's, $15. I'm like, nah, I don't want it.
Oh, did you rent it previously or something?
I saw it on – the only times I've seen it is online, and I've even seen it dub, I'm pretty sure. But it just – I don't know. I think if I catch it for $5 or less, I'll pick it up.
Yeah. Well, the main reason I got it is because it was with 80 Police Files, and I thought, two for one deal, it seems.
Yeah, and then you see 80 Police Files, you're like, oh my gosh, this is so good.
Yeah, I still got to watch that part.
Okay. You're going to love it. We'll have to do a review of it one day. And then Crash.
Among many of our other things.
Yeah, that's an ongoing list.
Just go through the bargain bin and review everything that you can find there. I'm sure you'll find $5, maybe Sin the Movie. I don't. That would probably be something.
I've heard. Oh man, I have not seen that, but I heard back in high school people were like, "Man, that was a piece of crap."
It was the only movie I've ever had sent to me, and I left it at my residence. I want nothing to do with this. The next person can suffer through it as much as I can.
It came from a PC game, didn't it, or something? They made a game for it.
I've completely forgotten it. It's out of my mind. Don't make me try to remember what was in it. I don't want to go through that again.
My local Blockbuster is going out of business, and the only two animes that I have that I'm trying to hide so nobody gets it, but even though it's probably not even worth hiding, is Wrath of the Ninja, the Otenden movie, and Tekken.
You mean and the ADV? Was it the ADV dub with the Offspring in the?
I guess because I saw the first 5 minutes of Tekken back in high school on the same VHS tape of an anime that I will talk about in a little bit, and I saw 5 minutes of it and I felt sick watching and I just shut it off and since then I'm like I can't bring myself to watch this. And then Blockbuster's going out, and I'm like, well, hell, if it's going to be $3 to get it, no one's going to touch it, I might as well just get it just to have it.
Just to make yourself sick again?
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe it just isn't as bad as I thought. I mean, I've watched a bunch of the other crappy fighting animes based off video games, which the best ones, the Fatal Fury ones, IMO, or, yeah, and I'm thinking, I've probably seen enough crap that Tekken's not going to faze me at all.
Well, it did the job in terms of, after I watched it, I'm like, I don't ever want to watch this again, but I want to play the video game. You know, the video, it reminded me that the video game was miles better than the anime.
I've got the sixth one, and it's like button mashing, basically. There's a combo system that exists, I think, in theory, but I just can't understand it. I guess, let me try to think of some other questions. I kind of came sort of prepared to what I wanted to ask you. I would say, okay, well, I have a question for you. Like, regarding what's been posted on your blog so far regarding other people's reviews of anime, have you seen some of that stuff or most of it?
I'll have to admit that a lot of what I've seen that's the older stuff to me is stuff that's, you know, in the mid-80s. I have watched a little bit of Marvelous Melmo, which was that if people don't remember what it is, it's basically the first sort of panty flash anime out there. And it was an Osamu Tezuka anime out there. It, as far as I know, TMS Anime has it on their YouTube channel. It's unfortunately, I think, only subbed in one episode, but they've got the rest of the series up there. It's been remastered, so it looks a lot better. The soundtrack is a lot better. So I'd probably say that's as far back as I can go. I desperately want to watch more from the older stuff, and you know, I'm probably jailing myself, you know, committing some sort of anime crime by saying that I didn't watch a lot from the 60s, but I guess if you count Speed Racer, that's definitely in there. But the 60s, I really don't go that far back.
Yeah. I'm kind of in this. Oh, go ahead, David.
Looking through here, there's a lot of stuff that, like, I feel like I should have seen, but I haven't. Like, Eight Man, for example, from 63.
And I'm hoping that's what this blog does, that it gets people to want to watch more from the 60s and 70s. And once we get into the 80s and 90s and up to modern day anime, that people will probably bring shows that sort of were lost underneath, you know, the popular stuff. So I'm hoping that, and I know it's spurring me to watch more anime from the 60s and 70s, but I'm hoping that this gets people interested in the older stuff.
Yeah, that seems to be the kind of the issue with today's fandom. It's like they only care about things that are like maybe in the past 3 or 4 years. Anything after that, it's just like, oh, it's too old. I can't watch it. It's just not for me. But, you know, you go back 15, 20 years, and it's like that's the kind of stuff I really like, because it's like they made whatever the hell they wanted to, and they didn't care, and I enjoy the heck out of it.
I think it also has to do with access. If you can get some of these older series up, like the Marvelous Melmo thing on YouTube, if you can get the older stuff up, that's easier to access for fans, not necessarily subbed or I mean, dub, you don't really need to head in that direction, but even a raw form, I think a lot of people would get into it.
I don't know. I'm not sure if people are willing to watch raws, are they? I mean, I haven't watched very many raws. It seems like when there's so much stuff subbed and dubbed that you can understand better that's out there, you're kind of hesitant to watch a raw.
I guess maybe I am. I'm sort of speaking a little prejudiced because, you know, anime has spurred me to make a career out of the Japanese language. So, I studied the language. I now work as a translator of sorts. So this, you know, maybe raw just appeals to me more. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if you understand Japanese more than I do, it's probably a lot easier to watch raw.
Right.
I guess my next question was, what do you do for a living that gets you money?
I don't really think I have the I really don't want to speak about my job. I'll just say that I enjoy it.
Okay.
And, you know, I work as a translator, so I'm not going to say who I translate for. But I'm just glad that I can use the Japanese language in the way that I've learned it through both anime and through all the other cultural exposure I've had. I don't work for an anime company though, so I'll just say that much.
That's my next question. No, I'm just kidding.
I can't give any free swag to anybody.
No, that's cool. I'm sure. I mean, when you said translator, I'm just like, he's probably working for like a company or something that's not anime related. Maybe, I don't know, but you know, it's like, well, whatever.
I enjoy my job. I'll just say it that much. If I'll say this for anybody that's afraid of learning any language, just learning one language, no matter where it is beneficial. Go out and do it. You don't even need Rosetta Stone. Just you know, go out and study a language, and you'll be better for it.
All right. I guess another question would be like some of the people that have written for your blog already. Do you know about their blogs or the stuff that they write about? Have you kept up with them even before you did this?
Well, there are some people that have written for the blog and that are going to write for the blog that I know through Twitter. So obviously I follow some of their blogs. Mike Toole wrote something recently for 1975. He's one of my best friends.
Nice.
We both started writing for An American Magazine. And so since then, you know, we both came from the Boston area. We both sort of grew up around that area, and even though he and I we've split up for a while, we stay in contact quite a bit. Charles Dunbar, as I mentioned, I've met him at some cons, and he's a cool guy. We got Daryl Surratt's going to write one for us. We've got Reverse Thieves; they're going to give something for us as well. It's hard to remember everybody off the top of my head, but that's what happens when you get 50. I think of the best writers out there.
Yeah, there's
a GW Otaku from Toon Zone wrote one also.
That's
right. I was going to say
right.
that.
Yeah, because Zionic and Josh and I all met on Toon Zone, and so we know of that guy from years ago.
He was a moderator back then, right? Or is he still is?
I think he still is. Yeah.
I'm really impressed by what everybody's giving me so far. I've noticed that people are very good at pointing out things about the staff from back then. So you know, I'm humbled being sort of the editor for this project. It's really nice to know.
That's pretty impressive that all this information about the staff on these shows is available so many decades later. You know.
Well, we definitely shouldn't ignore all the information that we've gotten from people, from fans in Japan. And I think it's one of those trickle-down effects that with all that fandom in Japan, a little bit's going to come through the cracks every year, and people are going to spread information about, well, this guy worked for Cutie Honey, this guy worked for Go Nagai, this guy was a designer for Tomino, and you know, things right over time, and you get to know all this information.
Yeah, it's always interesting to know the background of how these shows are made. Like, there was a manga called Gundam Sosei that was about how Tomino made the original Mobile Suit Gundam and Ideon, and I don't know how accurate it is, but, you know, they have a lot of the information about the people who are working with him and the circumstances of how well the show did and all that, and it's always interesting to learn about that kind of stuff.
So I wouldn't be surprised if you come across a lot of manga that has sort of those inside tracks, especially in the final three pages of the manga volume, where maybe the author will disguise himself as maybe in the case of Full Metal Alchemist, disguise himself as a cow and you know, show a perspective of what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I noticed that some of the people that have written for you, I mean, we got GW Otaku, which he came from Toon, or he's still part of Toon Zone, and then Dave Merrill, which I figured, like, all this stuff is right up his alley, because, like, his Let's Anime blog is pretty much, like, him writing about, like, this obscure show about, you know, that came out 30 years ago that I just happened to like that I just got to tell the world about. So I figured it would have been like 80% of the site would have been like towards the stuff that he's written about. But it's good to see that there's other people adding to this. And I'm like, wow, really?
It's funny because I think Dave, I knew Dave back when I was down in Atlanta. He helped run Anime X, one of the clubs down there. Mm-hmm. And so I knew him from that. But when I came out with this idea, he was one of the first guys that was basically knocking down my door. He's like, I got 1969. You're not taking that away from me. You know? So, but I think he's definitely the go-to guy in terms of knowledge from back then. He's a smart guy, and he's just real, I think, focused in terms of not only the cartoons, but also the comics from back then.
Yeah, I've even some of the old anime publications, like, that's kind of a thing. I have my own blog that's just, like, the same name as this, just take out the podcast. And I came up with it because I had all these, like, you know, old Animerica and, like, you know, English or, you know, yeah, pretty much English publications of anime magazines. And I'm like, I could scan this up and show it to people and just see what they say. And I do that once every couple months or so. But, like, I noticed some of the stuff I've got, it's like, here's our local anime club list that you can get signed up with. And it's like, the Atlanta Charter has Dave Merrill. And I'm like, huh. This guy's been around for quite a while, and this, you know, came out, this, you know, issue of Protoculture Addicts came from out from like 1990.
It's always interesting to see stuff like that. Like, I have some comics that have they have like ads for dealers, and like one of them is a local dealer that still sells stuff, and it's always interesting to see someone's name that, and it turns out they're still around, and it's just an interesting experience.
Yeah, they're a blog writer. They've been in, like, they worked for three other anime companies in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
I don't know, John, you got any questions for Jeffrey?
Which series do you have coming up, or would that be spoiling it?
Which you mean for this blog, or?
Yeah.
Let's see here. We've sort of had some people that they haven't bailed on us, but they're, you know, we're trying to get this in order, but obviously people are going to have conflicts. So, we just finished 1975, the one that, Mike Toole did. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to skip to 1977. But I've already gotten the stuff from that, and the guy that's writing it, he's covered a whole bunch of stuff. Sort of continuing the super robot sort of era, I guess, back then. So that's pretty much what I've gotten so far. I mean, people are sending me their things a little bit at a time. So I can't really spoil anything in terms of who wrote it. You know, I try to keep things under wraps in terms of who is writing the next one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's understandable. I guess for me, like, what was – I've taken that you've met people probably in the anime industry. If you have, what was somebody that you actually met that you're, like, really astounded to meet, or, like, the greatest person in the industry that you wanted to see or meet? Have you ever had a chance to meet them before?
That's a tough question because I've done some work as sort of a liaison and a translator at conventions. And so when you get that sort of position, you really have to swallow your pride. You can't, you know, go over the top and say, oh, I'm a real big fan. But I would probably say the person that I was maybe happiest to meet was Kape Yamaguchi, who is the voice actor for Inuyasha and for Ranma Saotome over in Japan.
Oh,
really nice guy, really down to earth. And he was floored. He went into Otakon over in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. And he just loved coming to America and learning about the fandom. And at the same time, it was great to meet probably one of the guys that I first listened to and first grabbed from anime in terms of a voice actor. So I would say that was the most impressive guy I've met so far.
Nice. I'm kind of curious, like, what they would think of anime fandom when they go to conventions and they're like, what is a Homestuck? What is a, you know, My Little Pony? Well, they're about to get that show in Japan, so.
Well, I think it's also just the same way as if we had brought over maybe, you know, a voice actor here and brought them to Japan, they'd be like, Wow, really? There's that sort of anime? That really? You know, yeah. So.
I wonder if they know that, like, Vince Mignon, like, voices Ed for Fullmetal Alchemist. They're like, Nani, who's this guy?
I mean, considering that Ed was voiced actually by a female voice actress in Japan, I'm sure that they would be shocked.
And then they hear him talking, and they're like, ah, okay. I can see how his voice can sound like Edward.
Yeah.
I've never actually had a conversation with that guy, but I've seen him, like, at this past convention I went to, and I was kind of reluctant. Because I guess there's some, I don't want to say too much, but I've heard there's some stories on that guy, so. But that was the same convention I had a chance to meet Tiffany Grant. And even I got a chance to interview her with our other podcast we were part of. And she was really cool.
Tiffany Grant was, I think, the second interview I ever did for An America Magazine. When they were doing sound bites, they had conversations with the American dub voice actors and actresses. And I remember I interviewed, let me see, I'm at the age where I can't remember things that clearly.
I'm getting there.
I interviewed the voice actress who did Nova for
some show.
Yeah, some show. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, it's a late night here, but
cool. Star Blazers.
Yes. I'm sorry. Boy, I it is a
good save, John.
Thank you, John. Thank you. But I interviewed her first, and then the second interview I did was Tiffany Grant right during the sort of the heyday of Neon Genesis Evangelion. Yeah. And it was great because she had shown up at the convention in an Asuka plug suit. So
I wonder if there's pictures.
That was
of
an
that.
Interesting interview nonetheless.
Yeah, there's been pictures online of her in that plug suit or whatever, like, I think in the past decade or so. And I've noticed that her hairstyle really hasn't changed in the past decade, but I'm cool with that.
if your hairstyle doesn't change in a decade, I think that's fine. It's better than losing hair over a decade, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, her hair looks great, so I don't think that's going anywhere. I doubt she's listening to this. I don't know.
If not, yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's really it for questions. I guess we can go. I mean, we got you on for about 38 minutes so far, so that might be enough.
Yeah, no one wants to hear me anymore.
I want to hear you. No, oh, I do. But we had our other theme for this episode, which is our anime first loves, since it's a Valentine's theme podcast. And since you're our guest, what was the first anime that you, Jeffrey, that you saw? That you're like, I have to watch. I love anime, and that's all I care about. I guess you said Akira, but was there anything else you wanted to add to that?
Well, I said Akira, but I was much more, I think, impressed by sort of the cinematography there. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say that it drew me to anime in terms of its staying power. I think it impressed me off the bat first off, and I'm like, I could really get into this. But if it had to be a show that really pushed me, I would probably say Mason and Koku.
Okay.
I really, once again, it's a Rumiko Takahashi series. It lasted a long time. And I was just impressed that it was able to create a story that it didn't have any science fiction. It didn't have any superpowers. It was just people that were sort of – it was sort of your real world before they had the real world. Reality TV before any of that happened. And I have to admit, I fell in love with Kyoko Otanashi, the landlady for Mason and Koku. Mm-hmm. She was, she maybe wasn't the brightest bulb, but she was, honest. She was sweet. And I really enjoyed the show from a drama perspective. So much so that one of the first anime t-shirts I had was one of those Viz Pio Pio t-shirts that looked exactly like her apron. So I would say that's definitely the show that drew me in.
What year did you get this shirt? I'm just curious if you remember the year.
It had to be one of the first cons I went to. I probably would say 1995.
Okay.
Somewhere around there. I know that it was when Viz was starting to release Mason Ikkoku, both subbed and a little bit of a dub.
Back on video cassette.
Yes, yes, back on video cassette.
$35 effing dollars a tape for maybe two episodes if you're lucky.
Well, hey, you bought it. If you really enjoyed it, you bought it. And
yeah.
I think it was a challenge back then, but I think it showed that you were a committed fan if you were able to dish out that money. I would do it again. If I had to pay, you know, for four episodes, if I had to pay $35, I'd do it again.
I've done that on DVDs and VHS tapes, which I'll get into that.
And it's always less expensive than the stuff that comes directly from Japan. So there's that.
Yeah, especially like today is like the Blu-ray stuff, you know, like people are spending like $80 on or higher on like Blu-rays.
And I remember I rented Furikuri once when I was in Japan. I rented it out and I'm like, oh, this is great. And I looked at the price in the back. I'm like, oh, it's a good thing. It's a rental. So yeah, I like I said, I would do that all over again.
Would you mind giving it like a basically like a brief like synopsis or like a, I guess like what is like Mason Ikkoku about like in general, like you know, what are the characters a little bit?
Well, Mason Ikkoku is the whole thing about living in Japan is that you might come across some apartment complexes that they would call Maison, which is, you know, it sounds like mansion, but basically it's from the French for residence. And in this Mason Ikkoku, there are six residents there. And one of them, his name is Godai, and he's desperately trying to get into college. He flunked the entrance exams a few times. And so he, you know, while he would want to study to get into college, he would always be egged on by his nosy neighbors. One was sort of a drunk. One was a single mother with her kid. One was this mysterious guy who would pop in through sort of like little mouse hole, you know, little cracks through his neighbor's wall. So, you know, there were sort of a bunch of people that just didn't get along with each other. And Godai is like, okay, I'm leaving. I don't want to be any part of this. I want to pass and get into college. And then he meets Kyoko, who is the brand new, you know, the brand new landlady for the landlord for the Mason Ikkoku complex. And at that moment, Godai is like, yeah, I'm staying right here. So it's the start of sort of a comedy slash romance where Godai wants to say that he's in love with Kyoko. But the thing about Kyoko is that she's not ready to open herself up to everybody because she's already had a husband before who had passed away. And so the series is basically shows that connectivity between the people in the complex and how even though they are annoying at first, they start to learn to like each other and get along with each other. And I think that was a great idea at the time, and it really opened my eyes to what anime was all about.
Okay.
I suggest people, if they can get their hands on it, they should definitely try to. I don't know if it's ever going to be released on DVD. It really wasn't a moneymaker for Viz when they had it back then. I mean, Ranma One-Half was their big show, so they really didn't have too many people that wanted to pick up Mason Ikkoku. I think probably because Mason Ikkoku was very big on fan subs back then. So would it come out again? I really hope it would.
I guess it's up to Discotech Media to see if they want to pick that up.
I really don't know. I mean, it might be harder to pry out of any of the... It might be harder to pry out of Viz's hands because they're still here. And
do they still got the license to it?
They should. I think they still do.
Oh, okay.
And since it is a Rumiko Takahashi title, who is still immensely popular over in Japan, I don't think they're going to give that up for free.
Yeah, I can see that. They're kind of rescuing titles that are like, or getting stuff that I don't think nobody really has a license for. It must be like affordable for them. Like, you know, they got the whole series of Mazinger Z and Captain Harlock, which someone told me, like, I wonder if they're just like licensing stuff because they might run out of money. Like, well, we'll just put our efforts into this stuff and just see if that picks it up or whatever.
Yeah, if you really want to hold on to your earnings, you probably wouldn't go for a big title like Mace Nikoku.
Okay.
If anything, you know, maybe some of her minor stuff might be released again, or, you know, if they decide to go Blu-ray, maybe Ranma 1/2 might be Blu-ray bound, but that was also a long series too, so I really don't know.
Is Ranma on DVD? Is Ranma 1/2 on DVD?
Yes, it is. I don't know how much it is. Yeah, I've got the first I've got the first 18 episodes, which was its own pack. But I don't know how far they went after that. I'm pretty sure they went pretty far.
But I had season 6 on DVD at one point. I think I tried reselling that I might have given that in a comic book trade or something, because I just like it. It's like it was like $15 on eBay like a year ago or so. And I was trying to resell it, and it was like pretty much sealed. So, because I picked it up on a whim when like Walden Books was going out, I'm like, oh, you know, it's $10. I'll pick it up. Johnny, there?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were going to say something.
No, I was just getting a drink of water. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I got some Ranma 1/2 on DVD that I picked up like randomly. It's like one of those like individual DVDs that I got from a place called Trade It, that's just like in North Carolina. And those were like $2 a DVD or something. I just kind of grabbed whatever I found, and I thought they'd be worth something, but not really so much. So they're just kind of sitting on my need-to-watch shelf that I might watch one day.
I mean, the good thing about it is that it's fairly episodic in terms of it's not – you know, the show isn't divided up into episodes where if you watch this one episode, it's fine. But you sort of need to have two or three episodes all connected together to really get the full effect. I mean, if you've seen some of the early Ranma 1/2 stuff, it sort of does go in like these three or four episode arcs. So,
okay.
Yeah. I sort of wanted to hear what you guys had for your first anime loves.
Actually, I'm going to go last on this, but John, what's yours?
Well, I guess the first anime I saw is probably Pokemon, because I grew up in the 90s, and that was so popular then. But I don't know if I would say Pokemon really got me into anime, because I don't know if I particularly realized when I was a kid that it was, like, Japanese even, you know? But, and then... you know, Toonami, I saw Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z on there, and I got really into that. Hold on, the birds are making noise.
That's our mascot.
Yeah, they have to scream every episode.
His bird has been through all our podcasting experience in the past 2 years as background noise.
Awesome, he's in this one now too. Way to go, there, bird.
He's been in this one a couple of times, yeah. He's, like, I'll be sad when that bird ever dies or something if John doesn't kill it. Ugh.
Now, does it speak or does it just tweet?
No, it speaks too.
All right, cool.
I figured it'd be like, David, shut up. I don't want to hear you talk about anime anymore. Rot?
Cockatoos live longer than humans, so I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Oh, so you have a cockatoo? Is that what it is?
Uh-huh.
All right. Say, so yeah, like, you're on Dragon Ball or something, and you're like, oh, this bird's talking.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z on Toonami, I used to watch that, and the other stuff they had on, too. I saw Tenchi and Kenshin, and I guess just generally Toonami would be what got me into anime.
So it wasn't like a particular show that got you hooked on anime, it was just really just the Toonami block.
Well, if I had to say something, I would say Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, but Toonami in general, I think, is what got me into it.
Okay. I would ask you for a review, but I think a lot of people know about Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z by now.
Yeah, I think most people have seen it.
But, yeah, I'm pretty sure that, like, I don't give our anime, I don't think I really give our fans or anybody who's a fan of this podcast a lot of credit regarding, like, well, we might have to explain it in case there's that one person out there that doesn't know what this show is. But I'm pretty sure with Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, they're going to know that by now.
Well, earlier you were saying a modern anime fans only know 3 or 4 years back, and I think Dragon Ball is what, like, when did Dragon Ball start? It must have started in, like, the 80s in Japan.
Yeah, like, 87. But yeah, there is 87? Kai. There is Kai, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
They did have a few Dragon Ball Z movies, as far as I know. So that definitely keeps the interest, at least trying to keep the interest generationally in Japan. I don't know if the movies were ever released over here.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure we got all the movies over here.
Yeah, all the movies have come out here, and then there's another one coming out this year in Japan. I don't think it's been licensed here yet, but I'm pretty sure Funimation will release it.
I heard that Fox actually licensed it, not Funimation this time.
Yeah, well, there's still new Dragon Ball material coming out here. Like, for instance, the last episode of Kai, like, at this moment we're recording, is airing on Nicktoons.
Oh, wow, they're finally airing it?
Yeah. So it's not like there's not still new Dragon Ball stuff.
And then they're also making the Buu saga for Kai.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still love Dragon Ball. I mean, my birthday is tomorrow, so I got some Amazon gift cards, like, from my uncle. And I spent those to try to fill in the holes in my Dragon Ball VHS tape collection, which, you know, those things used to be like $20, but they're kind of...
Oh, yeah.
They've sunk down, but there's barely any on Amazon.
They've sunk down drastically.
Yeah. It used to be like $20 for three episodes, and it's kind of a ripoff, but we didn't know that at the time, did we?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you jackhole, I didn't know it was your birthday. Thanks for telling us.
Well, it's not
yet. I kind of did that to you, like, I think our guy next month. I was like, yeah, my birthday's tomorrow. So, it's okay. We're even.
Yeah, I'm 20 tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
What? One more 20? Year. One more year, then you'll be able to celebrate it. Yeah.
Wow. My brother turns 21 in May. So I'll have to do something for him on that. But yeah, I remember going, like, when I got into Dragon Ball Z, when it was on Toonami, and this was like 1999, like, I go to Suncoast and they'd be there. They're having them for $30 because, like, they aired up to episode, I think, 50 or 52. It was like halfway through the Namek saga or right when the Ginyu Force came, and then the show restarted. And I'm like, fuck!
Damn, oh, I totally sympathize. They did that with Boo too, and they just did it for months and months. They would re-air the episodes, and I was like, is Vegeta dead or not? You know, I was like so on the edge of my seat for months, and I eventually just caved in and bought the tapes, and that's how my collection got started.
Yeah, because I was just like, when are they gonna get past that? I'm like, there's no way the show could just end right when the Ginyu Force comes on Namek. There's just no way. And then I try to convince my aunt to get, like, to try to see if, like, any Blockbuster at that time you could rent them, and none of them had it. But it was like, how do I convince my parents to spend $30 on a tape to get three more episodes of a show so I know what happens? And I'm like 13 with no money.
Now, the cool thing that I appreciate about Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z is that it took such a long time for it to get released over here in the United States. And by then, you know, when it was finally getting released and now it's being re-released as Kai, now you're seeing all the people, all the cartoonists and the mangaka come out that who themselves were raised on it. You know, One Piece really resembles Dragon Ball in many different aspects of its characterization. And so you're sort of getting that double overlap. And that's one of the cool things that they have now.
Yeah, there's a new anime special coming out in a few months that's a One Piece Dragon Ball Z Toriko crossover. And so all these people that love Dragon Ball are now getting to, like, collaborate with it, and I'm sure that's like a dream come true for them.
That's sort of like a three generation prong right there: Dragon Ball, and then One Piece, and then Toriko. They all sort of come from the same tree, of course.
Yeah.
Josh, what was your anime that got you to love anime?
Well, like John, I was part of the Pokemon generation. And I also wouldn't quite say that it was Pokemon that got me into anime, though I did know it was Japanese, because, like, one day my mom, like, sat me down in front of computers, like, hey, look what I found. She played the Japanese opening to Pokemon, like, on one of those early video streaming sites.
You know, that, like, reminds me.
Oh, cool.
That reminds me. I did actually know, because there were, I would buy the Pokemon cards, and there was a place that sold the Japanese ones, and I remember seeing that, and knowing that that it was Japanese.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
I think you were, like, the coolest kid in school if you had, like, a Japanese import of the cards. And then, like, eventually it became, like, you know, you can win them in, like, little quarter slot machines or something.
I still remember back in middle school, or no, it might have been elementary school. There was, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Had just come out, and then this kid came into school and was like, hey, I have this deck of cards from Yu-Gi-Oh! And this was, like, still, like, 5 months before the cards started coming out in the U.S. So he was, like, the most popular kid in the class.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. I would definitely say that the anime that, that, like, I started getting really into was Digimon.
Oh,
which is why my handle is Vemon Josh.
I should have mentioned that. I did watch Digimon back in the 90s before I watched Dragon Ball.
I never got into Digimon. I just couldn't get into it. I don't even think I've ever sat through a whole episode of Digimon.
Though also another anime that I saw really early on was when I was a little kid, I did see Akira, and for a like 6 year old to see Akira, that's definitely. It definitely blew everything else out of the water.
It changed you for sure.
Changed you? It must have given you nightmares. Jeez.
Not really. I was kind of a twisted child anyways.
I'm kind of on Josh's defense on this, because I think I've screwed up somebody once where like they finished Evangelion. This is like a year ago when he finished the TV series and I owned the end of Evangelion movie. So we went and watched it. And usually the first time people see that, it's just they ask like 80 million questions to me of like, what's going on? What does this mean? I'm like, I don't know. And the kid was already shell-shocked from what he saw. And I went, okay, well, we'll put in another anime and you might like this. I put in Wicked City.
Oh.
At least to him, it made perfect sense. And I said, congratulations, you have moved yourself up for being an anime fan from a little Cub Scout to about an Eagle Scout worth, because you saw Wicked City.
You might have to bring up in a future podcast what anime or what anime movie just scared the pants off you or confused the hell out of you. I'm pretty sure you might see some of those come up there.
I do remember, like, with Akira, like, I remember the only scene I ever saw of it before I even saw the movie, like, months before I ever saw it, was I was on a missions trip in Ecuador. This was like 2001, and they had an anime channel on there called Locomotion, and like I saw Tokyo 2040 like in Spanish dubbed. I didn't care; it was anime because it was awesome, and I saw that in like Evangelion in Spanish. So that was my first exposure to Evangelion. But then also they had like a preview where they combined all the anime into like this huge music video techno thing. And they had Akira on there, and I kind of knew it was Akira, but it was a scene where Tetsuo, or I think it was Tetsuo that was like, he stole the bike from Kaneda, and like got beat up from the bother biker dude from the clowns, and like he goes and like, you know, beats up the clown dude, and the clown dude runs off, and then he starts wigging out, and you see his guts just explode on the sidewalk, and like that freaked me out for like hours. And I'm like, do I even want to watch Akira? Do I even want to know what this is? And then eventually I watched it and I was just like, this is actually pretty good.
It blows your mind. It just imagine having to watch that at 2 a.m. in the morning in college. That'll even freak you out even more.
Were you drunk when you saw that?
No, it was when I was 19. It was when I was 19. Come on, guys.
Well, we know some 19-year-old college students that get drunk all the time.
No, no. So. It was one of those things where, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and because you can't get drunk, because you really are still under lock and key, what can we do at 2 o'clock in the morning? And Akira just happened to be the perfect thing.
I think anime must have been pretty popular in Latin America around then, because I was on like a cruise that went to Mexico that same year, and I remember on TV they had the Spanish dub of Samurai X and DBZ.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, well, I wonder if it was the same, like, broadcast, the same. It might have been, you know?
It might have been, because, like, I think I kind of knew what it was. I think I remember hearing about Rurouni Kenshin, like, in, you know, ninth grade, and I went over there, and I saw, like, if it had a label that Samurai X, and I think it was, like, the third arc or whatever, which I haven't seen any of that. And it was, like, Sanosuke on, like, an island or in a cage, like, in a cave along the coast or something. And they just talked the whole time, and I'm like, this looks kind of cool. I just wish they kind of do something.
Oh.
And then I'm like, oh, well, you know, hey, Evangelion's going to come on next, so I'm not going to complain.
I wish I had seen Ava back then, but I didn't. Although it could have screwed me up. There's some messed up stuff in Ava.
Well, I told you, like, with our Evangelion podcast, that I borrowed, like, the tapes, you know, both English dubbed and subbed from a buddy of mine in high school, that he had, like, the whole series in VHS. And he pretty much just brought, like, two or three tapes, like, a week to me. So then I go home and, like, you know, try to marathon them or whatever within a couple of days whenever I got home from school. And I gave it back to him that Friday, and I'm just like, yeah, I'll bring you more, you know, Monday. And I'm like, awesome.
So,
go ahead, Josh.
I was also going to bring up that I think what really got me set on anime well, it was when I started watching Toonami, and I've mentioned this to you guys before, but the show that got me into Toonami was Hamtaro. Yes, I just started watching it. For some reason, I got hooked on Hamtaro. Then I started watching the rest of Toonami, and it was like, that was it.
My God, this other stuff is so much better than Hamtaro.
I'll have to admit, when I was over in Japan, Hamtaro was one of the first anime shows that I saw while I was in Japan, and I loved it. I don't know if you've ever heard the Japanese voice actor or actress that's done Hamtaro, but it is the cutest thing ever, and I'm not into cute anime really that much, but
I think I know who you're talking about, or I know that voice.
It was just, you know, Boku wa Hamtaro no da, and I'm like, oh, okay, you're adorable. Yeah, you're gonna do really well in America. Trust
me. You just kind of sat down. And you're like, the show is just so good.
It sort of gets that. I think it's the same vibe that I have with like Polar Bear Cafe now. It's like, oh, it's so adorable. You know, and you just go on that vibe, and I'll have to admit that's a really good show to get started with.
I think Cheese Sweet Home has that same effect too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. John, were you about to say something?
Oh, just that I watched Hamtaro also back then.
I knew a guy in high school who, like, when it was on Toonami, he had the Hamtaro theme like on his MP3 player, and he brought it to this guy's truck that had like a, you know, a 20-inch subwoofer in it. And they're blaring the Hamtaro theme in the parking lot. And the guy's looking at him like, dude, Matt, what the hell? And he's just grinning at him. He's like, I don't care.
Do you remember the theme?
It was the opening theme. It's like, dun, 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 something.
Little Hamster's Big Adventures. That's the line I remember.
I'm pretty sure it was that. We're just like, Matt, what are you doing, man? He's just like grinning. He's like, yep, Hamtaro. I guess I'll go ahead and talk about my thing. So anyways, like, Toonami was my gateway to anime, but I mean, I liked anime, but then also, like, I went through a period where I didn't like it for a few months. And that was the time where, like, Big O and Outlaw Star came on Toonami, so I missed out on that. But then I watched Big O when I was on Adult Swim later. I would say that, like, I was a Gundam fan in high school, so I guess for me, like, I kind of look at this question since I came up with it, that you know, yeah, granted, Gundam got me to be an anime fans in a way, but it was really like Gundam was the only thing I cared about, and like that's just one spectrum of anime. It wasn't like the anime gateway of I need to watch more and see what this other stuff is about. But I think the first anime I actually fell in love with, and I still love it to this day, even though it's gotten like another, you know, kind of a sort of a, they kind of redid it sort of on another OVA series, was the 1999 or 1990 OVA Soul Bianca.
Oh yeah.
So here's how it went. Like, I borrowed a tape from some friends of mine who recorded. I am almost positive it was the American dub of Soul Bianca that they record from Stars, and I got it on tape because they're just like, yeah, we got some anime, you can watch some of this. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And I put in Soul Bianca, and like, that's all I care. That's like the thing I just fell in love with. Like, I loved it. Like, it was 45 minutes of like the greatest thing I've ever saw, you know, space pirate chicks and, you know, a spaceship that can like go through inner dimensions and monofilament wires and like, you know, meeting corrupt officials and all this other stuff. And, you know, they go in there and they bring their spaceship and the other, you know, big guy spaceship, and they just like, you know, wreak shit everywhere and, you know, whatever. but you know, after seeing it, like, I just like wanted more of it. I was just like, I love Soul Bianca because that was like all I cared about. And I was still a big Gundam fan and everything. But regarding what Soul Bianca is, it, you know, they can't, there's two, I want to say it's standalone because they made a second OVA like 2 years later that I saw it recently, maybe a few months ago, and, you know, it wasn't that bad, but it just didn't stick, and it didn't, you know, amount to the same weight as like the first one did. Like, you know, the second one wasn't bad. It was like the second one was going somewhere, but then like it had a story to it. It was going to supposedly continue, but they lost, you know, they didn't have enough funding, so they never came up with the other one, which I would love to see if they ever did it, but I doubt it. But so like I would see, you know, the second one in the wild, which that's only happened a couple of times, and I would pass that up because I'm just like, I didn't like the second one as much. And sometimes I think it shouldn't exist, but it's not that bad. It's just kind of like, you know, blah. But I could talk about the first one for a while, and I think this might be my only chance to talk about the first Soul Bianca OVA.
Do you mean do you mean the first episode, or like Soul Bianca and Soul Bianca the Legacy as being like the first and the second?
Legacy is something different. Like, I saw the Legacy a few years ago and I thought it was okay. Like, it's like, I remember enjoying it, but like I'm pretty sure that's like 12 episodes, I think.
Wiki says it's six.
It is six. Okay. Yeah, it's true. Okay, it's six episodes. Like, I saw that and I didn't think it was bad at all. I liked it, but it just like didn't stick as well as the first one.
I guess the first thing is always going to be the most memorable.
Yeah, but and again, I want to, because they did a dub to this. You know, that it does exist, but apparently like it's so hard to find. Like, there's no download of it whatsoever. It's all the Japanese version that's been, like, you know, fan-subbed or whatever. It's probably the ADV subtitled version that's online, which I would love to see the dub version. Like, it's got it's got Tiffany Grant in it. It's got Sue Lu. It's got Kim Seaver. Steve Bloom was in it.
That's right.
Or Chapman. I would love to hear this again, because it's like I think back, I'm like, I know, it's like you saw a ghost or something. It's like people who got abducted by aliens, but not on the same level. Like, I know abducted by aliens. I know it happened to me, but like regarding if it really happened, I can't say for sure, but I felt like it did. So that's like my feeling of like saying that I saw this dubbed, because I want to say I did.
Oh, I know what you feel like. There's sometimes something that you remember and you like can't find any proof for it, you know?
But deep down in your heart, it exists. I mean, it does, but it's just you haven't seen it since then. You're like, I need confirmation to back up my claim, but there really isn't anything out there.
Yeah.
But the only time I've ever reviewed this, I wrote written reviews for the AAA podcast, Anime Addicts Anonymous, like, when they asked people to write blog stuff for them, which they don't even care about anymore. But pretty much it's about five girls that are basically space pirates. You've got, and they're basically named after each of the months of the year. Like you got April, who's the short hair blonde, cool, calm, collected. You got Feb, who, you know, February, like an ex-model or whatever, and she's kind of the tough one. No, Feb is the main space captain, even though she just gets drunk all the time. Janie's the tough one. And then you got June, who is like the techno geek girl. And then there's May, who's like the little cute little girl that pilots the mech. Because they have their own little mech. And pretty much the story is they meet this kid in a storage container because he's trying to go to a planet to help his mom or whatever. And then they wind up finding out, you know, they go to the planet to try to help them or whatever because they got nothing better to do. And they meet the leader of the world, who's an utter dick, of course. And they wind up going to like this other planet that the main planet has colonized, but there's a revolt on that planet, and they go over there to, you know, basically take everyone out, which has the kid's father on there, and awesome space pirate stuff. I guess I don't want to spoil too much, but
yeah, don't spoil the ending. Josh and I still have to see it, or at least I do. I think Josh hasn't seen it.
This might be my only chance to talk about it, but I mean, again, like I this was like the anime of like I that kind of opened the doors of like what else is out there that I should really check out other than Gundam. And like I remember seeing like the Bubblegum Twice Crisis Tokyo 2040 series, which I had my eye on for a few months, and then like whatever stuff I could find from Kazaa when everybody used that or something back then. Yeah, I've got stuff on CD, like data CD that I haven't even finished watching or whatever. And that's just kind of like my gateway to get into other stuff.
Like Gundam X.
Gundam X can't. I got Gundam X like the year before that I saw Bianca. So that wasn't. Or wait, was that the same? No, that was the same year. That's right.
What year was this?
2002, I think.
So you've been watching that show for 11 years.
I've got eight more episodes. I'm going to finish it by the end of the month. I guarantee it, John. I know it's taken me 5 months to see it. Whereas for you, you're like, oh, I blew through it in a month. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I marathoned some of that.
We're talking about VHS tapes that cost a lot. I still to this day do not regret my purchase of paying $30 for Soul Bianca on VHS right before the VHS market crashed. I do not regret that purchase whatsoever. It was worth it.
Did it have both episodes?
No, it's just the one. And then also, like, a few months ago, I got Soul Bianca on Laserdisc, and that was $20 I got from some guy online. And that's the ADP copy of it.
I gotta track that down. I don't have any anime on Laserdisc. It's a big missing spot in my collection.
It's about the best place if you can get something on the cheap there. Also, like,
what's
this anime... Go ahead.
Say it again. What's the best place?
I guess eBay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If you can try to find something domestically there, you're going to pay basically $10 or more for a disc, but that's still doing pretty decent.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, this anime won an award for Best OVA at 1993 Anime Expo. So it's worth something, I guess. And it had its own TurboGrafx-16 game. I think it's an adventure game that I want to play one day. Or it's a Turbo CD game, excuse me. It's a role-playing game, according to Wikipedia. I need to play this somehow.
I wonder if there's like a if it's available online anywhere.
I think it is, and I tried booting it up or something. I think I was like, well, I'll try out Cyber City 080 on Turbo CD and see if that works. And it's just like, it's not working anything for me. And I'm like, like you have to make like an ISO image and then boot it up and then see if it's going to read the CD or something.
Yeah, I tried to do that like a bunch of years ago with one of the Ava games. I think it was like Girlfriend of Steel or something, and I just could never get it to work. The ISO file, I just
feel like the dating sim game or something.
Is that what that is? I don't know. It's just like it's just it was an Ava game that I found online, and I was like, I want to play this because I just seen the show. And I didn't know what was in it, but I never got it to play.
There's like 70% of the Ava games are like dating sim related. I told you there's like a Dreamcast one where like Rei Ayanami and you basically go out and shop and buy crap for her. Yeah. That's all I did for an hour, and I'm like, this game is not that good.
Was that for Saturn?
Dreamcast, or I played it on Dreamcast. which I might have that disc somewhere. So yeah, Soul Bianca is my first anime love. Obviously, like I have, it's one of my favorite OVAs. Like if you say, what's your favorite OVA? I'm going to say Soul Bianca. And I would categorize, I should be able to say Bubblegum Crisis, but that is my overall favorite anime. But I look at that as more as a series, like with everything being made out for it, because there's so much there. And there's a dedicated fan base that I'm part of, and people talk about all this detailed BS crap about it that is actually really interesting when you think about like corporate stuff and everything, and people go into arguments, which is just fantastic over Bubblegum Crisis. But to me, it's beyond like just being a standalone OVA, obviously. Whereas Soul Bianca, it's not really standalone, but I look at it as that. But that was like the first anime I really fell in love with, and I guess I'm still really obsessed over if there's any Soul Bianca related anything out there, you know, cells or a poster, I will pick that up.
We gotta watch that and do a full review of it someday.
Yeah, it's only like 45 minutes long, so I've got it on tape. I know, you know what? Let's go through the whole experience of watching it on Laserdisc.
Yeah, I should buy a Laserdisc and we'll just like sync up our Laserdisc players and like watch it at the same time or something.
Soul Bianca.
Say it again.
Because that's what, do commentary on it?
Yeah. Like we do with your Justin TV channel, you know.
Oh yeah, just AIM commentary or whatever. We gotta find something to hook up where we're talking on our computers and playing PSN games.
Oh yeah, I gotta get a headset someday.
Yeah. If you can get a Bluetooth, it should work.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I just record on here using the Mac's built-in software, and so oh. I don't have a USB headset for that reason. But I should get one for my PS3, since I just got that.
Check like Big Lots and see if they got like a cheap Bluetooth headset for like $10 or something.
Yeah. Next time out there, I'll check.
All right. Or I guess you got that Bookman's. See if they sell anything there.
Oh, I checked their PS3 stuff, but, well, maybe it would be somewhere else. I don't know. Somewhere else in the store.
It'll take any, like, USB or Bluetooth headset. Like, I could pop in the thing I use, my Logitech, and it'll read it just fine.
Hmm.
I think that's it for this recording. I mean, I got really nothing else to add, Jeffrey, unless, Jeffrey, you want to say something.
Well, I'm just listening to this entire thing. I have to admit that I've forgotten all about Soul Bianca, but I really liked it at the time. It was one of those, girls in space sort of one-shot OAVs, and you sort of saw a lot of that trend back then. I think it was done by AIC, which is the same company that did Bubblegum Crisis, the same company that did. One of Kenichi Sonata's other shows, Golf Force.
Yeah, he did a character design on that.
And it had sort of, you know, the whole Dirty Pair feel to it as well. You know, it was one of those shows that I think because it was so, I think the characters really looked more real than they did any sort of cartoon version of it. Uh-huh. That it probably didn't have as much of a following because it looked too real. But it was definitely one of those shows that I think it capitalized off of the whole Star Blazers, the whole spaceship Yamato trend of sending people into space and seeing what happens. I do wish it lasted longer. I wish that they had more funding, and I'm kind of surprised that AIC didn't go in that direction.
Yeah, the director of this, Katsuhito Akiyama, directed the Gale Force OVAs, even Bubblegum Crisis. I'm not sure which episode of that, because there was different directors.
Right, right.
Yeah, he did parts of Gale Force. He directed the Armitage 3 Dual Matrix movie, which I haven't seen that yet.
That's right. Yeah.
He even directed Thundercats, the 80s Thundercats series. I'm not sure how much of that, but he's credited as a television director.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did a few episodes of that show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never got into Legacy, which was the late 90s, early 2000s version of Soul Bianca. But I hope that they at least try to bring it back in some form. I don't know. I really don't know if who's got the rights to that, because I think it was a Geneon Pioneer.
I think it's Pioneer, actually. I actually got the first DVD when because the guy who gave me the Laserdisc just threw that in there, and I didn't even know. And I'm thinking, okay, cool.
Didn't Funimation rescue the Geneon and Pioneer libraries, or no?
I don't think so, or at least not this one.
They got some of them, but
if they did, I don't think they saw, you know, much of a popularity, sadly, for it. So
yeah,
they probably are sitting on it. It's probably buried in some vault somewhere.
And like I like this one because it's like the whole women empowerment thing. Like, you don't need fan service. It's just like, you know, girls, women surviving on their own. Like, it's not really, they didn't have to be sexualized or anything. It's just like, you know, hey, these girls can make it on their own, just like, you know, and they treat it like they're normal. They don't have to have them like in panty shots or like getting naked or something. I mean, they do, they would, because that's just the 80s thing, but it's not like over sexualized how it is now to make them look really stupid, because they're really, they're intelligent, and like, I like women like that.
Maybe that's,
I like
why
the 80s anime
longer.
Women like that.
That might have been why it didn't succeed in the end. It wasn't like a Mole Diver where it had to be, you know, over sexualized, you know, machinery. So I, maybe that was one of the reasons why I didn't do as well as it should have.
Yeah, I do want to point out that Soul Bianca had, or they did something that GoGo 13 has not done yet, and that's snipe somebody from space.
That's right. Wasn't she drunk too at the same? That was Fed.
Yeah, no, she was.
She was on the bottle.
Fed was hung over as hell. And they're like, we really need your help with this execution. Can you come down and can you, you know, help us with this? And they're like, well, I got that space sniper rifle. We can give that a shot. And then she's basically missing half the shots. They're like, Fed, you dumb ass bitch drunk. Why are you missing? She's like, shut up. I got this.
And we wonder why there wasn't a third OAV. Yeah.
Oh, man, I would love to see more drunk Fed with sniper rifles. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's all I can say about Soul Bianca. It was a great one-shot. I can't picture it going very far, though.
I don't know, but that's my baby there. So, like, it kind of took me a while to find a really good price on a Soul Bianca Laserdisc. Like, there was a guy from, like, I think Maryland or something a year ago. I was trying to sell his, and it was like an import for like, he wanted like $100 on eBay or $90. And I'm like, dude, you're retardedly ridiculous about that.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, you know, would you take 25? He's like, I don't know about these rest of these prices and all this other stuff. I'm going with this price, so I'm declining your offer and all this. And I'm like, F you.
Speaking of anime in Maryland, though, one of those Dragon Ball tapes I ordered is from our Wonder Books and Video in Maryland.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to get another one of those big, bulky cases with all the stickers all over it.
Yeah, did you ever say Japanimation on it, like it did with my Zillion tape?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Awesome! Yeah, well, Jeff, me and John, or David, have a connection regarding, we were talking about this in AIM one time, where, and I think we did a podcast episode about this, too. I think we got that recorded, or I can't even remember. No, we did record it. Okay.
We might even have talked about it on here twice. I'm not sure.
Okay. No, we haven't talked about it on here, but it was the Cybernauts cast.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I got a tape and it had a sticker from this video store in Maryland. Because I bought like a handful of these Red Photon Zillion tapes, the ones by Streamline, the TV series that they only did like the first 5 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And I got that with Burning Night too, and I told him the sticker about it. We're on AIM one night, and I was telling him, he was like, I think I've got a tape of that, but it's my Arcadia of Youth tape. And we're like, dude, what's the number and like what's the location? And we realized it was like the video store, and like, you know, we had like stuff that we got from them. We're like, dude, we have some sort of connection going on. But an hour 25 for a podcast, I think, is good enough.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. On a Friday night too. I'm kind of surprised I'm still up.
Yeah, I thought you'd be like, I mean, because you're like, oh, I'm like get drunk, and I'm like, oh, you can go ahead and do that.
Nah, I said that just out of jest. I really don't drink that much. It's okay. One of those things where you know, Friday nights are more for like warm milk for me nowadays.
I've done our past podcast intoxicated a few times. I think I was guzzling beer when I was talking about the Evangelion Sega Saturn games because those pissed me off.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. They really do need to have, I think, you know, people that have more confidence into reviewing things drunk. You know, I don't think I have that sort of spine. I'm too nice. I couldn't say enough bad things about something.
Yeah, it just really wasn't like that I was mad about something. I'm just like, I really want booze and a talk at the same time. This might work, possibly.
I think some of the unicorn episodes you were drunk during, too, also.
It might have been. You might be right.
Like the one where you said Bernard instead of Benosher. I think that one.
No, that's just my dyslexia kicking in.
It could be, yeah.
I think when I was watching Cyber City 08, I kept blacking out when I was rewatching it, like dozing off. I'm like, oh, stay awake.
Don't forget G Savior.
Like cooking whiskey.
Don't forget G Savior. You had to get drunk to make it through that one, and then we recorded after.
That sounds like me through G Savior. Yeah. See, Jeff, we have fun on this podcast, so we're pretty cool. Well, I mean, John's actually gotten governmentized from pot. it's cool. He's got a green card, so he can only take as much as the government tells him to.
Oh.
And that was the greatest amount of time on there. And I remember, like, what was it? When we did it with Steve, he got, like, offended by it or something because he wanted to bring some guy on. He's like, it wasn't good podcast etiquette. I'm just like, that crap was funny.
Oh, he didn't even tell us, though, that he wanted to bring that guy on.
Yeah, he's just going to bring someone on. And then he realized that how you're acting. He's like, that was just so unprofessional. I'm like, well, way to be professional about not telling us to tell you're going to bring someone on.
Hey, I managed to, like, stop recording at the right time and everything, and it was, like, my first time. Yeah. It went pretty well, all things considered.
A few times you're like, what are we talking about? Oh. But, yeah. Alright, we need to go ahead and close this off. We do what's called closing remarks, so you can say whatever comes on your mind for your closing remarks. What do you got, Jeffrey?
First of all, thanks for inviting me to the podcast. This is the first time I've ever been on a podcast. So I'm pretty sure that I don't even have a voice for radio. So it's good to try this for the first time. I think really all I can say is, to people out there that want to know more about everything that they've been raised on, you know, I'm a firm believer that there's always a predecessor to something. There's always an influence of something that leads to something else. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, magic seed where everything sprouts from. So if you want to, you know, learn, in baby steps about anime's evolution, its path towards where it is now, I definitely suggest people follow my follow our blog, because this is a contribution from everybody. At Golden Ani, that's GoldenAni .blogspot.com. It's the golden anniversary of anime, and we're only at 1977, so we still have a good 40 years left to cover. So I hope people will tune into this podcast and they will tune into the book as well. But yeah, thanks for your time, guys.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Anytime.
All right. John, what's your final remark?
I guess I'll just do what I usually do and recommend that people follow All of That Goku on Twitter, because it's just a great experience.
Josh?
I'm going to go with a related thing and say, when suggest to anyone listening, whatever you do, do not spend $125 on Dragon Ball soda.
Wow, that must have been either very expensive soda or a lot of soda.
I think it was about 7 cans.
Oof, jeez.
Totally worth it.
And I looked up the Japanese price. It's like 110 yen per can when they're sold in Japan. So yeah. It's like He overspent for sure.
Yeah, and I found a video of a girl who bought them in the U.S. for only $3 a piece. So they're not they're not even expensive here.
Oh boy!
So he got ripped off some high exuberant percentage amount that I don't even want to feel like calculating right now.
This is the guy who had to sell his furniture to buy groceries, and he's spending $125 on soda.
Priorities there.
He's probably like guzzled them and like threw them up in the toilet by now because he thought it would be like give him superpowers even more or something.
He's waiting by the door for the delivery man.
Wait a second. You said that he got 7 cans of Dragon Ball soda?
He bought them on Amazon. 7 cans for $125.
Did they have were they like the 7 Dragon Balls? Like each had one had a star, one had 2 stars?
Oh, that would have been cool, but no, it's
that
just the chests.
Cool.
It would have been. It was just the chests of various characters, though.
Oh, well. Well, $3 a pop makes sense then.
Yeah.
And I guess mine would be Jeffrey, thank you for having you. For being on the show. You actually have a pretty good voice. I think you're more professional than us, so. And that is saying something.
And on your first time. We've been doing this for years.
Dude, you're a freaking pro. We've been doing this for almost 2 years, and we cannot get our crap together. And that's no joke, either.
It's one of those things where I've been doing this mostly written for such a long time that I've always said, okay, if I get in front of a camera, I better watch my mouth. So I think that's just where all, you know, I try to stay humble with what I do. But yeah, thanks for inviting me, guys. I hope people will follow this, and I hope people follow the blog, and, I hope more and more people get interested in the stuff, that came out before they were born.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. We're at an even hour and a half, so I'm going to say, stay tuned next week for what are we talking about next week?
No. We got Gundam Month in March, so I think that might be the next real recording that we do. Daff wanted us to watch some stupid movie, but I don't think that's going to happen.
That's not going to happen. Stay tuned next week for Gundam X.
Oh. Probably. Well, I was going to say, if we need filler for 1 week, we could always do a JoJo review.
Oh, yeah. Well, Zionic hasn't seen that yet.
Oh, yeah, you guys. Sure. I've still got that, the CN upfront and, that thing where we recruited Mason's podcast to put up. Unless you just, you don't want to do anything with that. Or I might just combine those into one episode or something. I don't know.
Well, stay tuned next week for something.
Yeah, something will happen. No.